baie welkom by Sterre en Planete. Soos gewoonlik, hier in die eerste Sondag in die maand het ons vir Jim Adams daar in Maryland in die VSA by ons. Goeienaand, Jim.
Goeienaand, Honey.
En dan het ons natuurlik vir Mati Hofman en vir Willie Koorts. Mati is in Bloemfontein, Willie Koorts in die Kaap. Now, Jim, we've heard about Lucy, the mission, and that there seems to be a problem with some of the solar panels, that it is not unfurling properly. Could you fill us in? What is the problem there at the moment?
First off, we'll just cut to the chase and say it's going to be okay for Lucy, but it didn't go as expected. So Lucy is a mission that heads out to the Trojans and the Greeks, which are two different bodies that are in the same orbit, two different areas that hold captured asteroids that are in the same orbit as Jupiter. And so Lucy is a mission to explore some of the most ancient debris from the formation of our solar system. What happened was they launched it several weeks ago, had a perfect launch. And we waited for to get the word that the solar rays had unfurled, and we did, and so everybody kind of hung up, you know, and went to bed. But the but these solar rays, they unfurl like large Japanese fans, and so they are 7.3 meters across when they unfold, and there's two of them. So if you put them side by side, which Lucy does, just to give you a sense, it's larger than the pitch in a cricket stadium. So they would extend beyond the 2 points of the cricket pitch. And the biggest solar rays ever flown in space, and qualified to go all the way out to Jupiter, which is, if you think about it, is an amazing thing. The only other mission that's flown solar rays to Jupiter was Juno. And this mission will go further out than Juno, even. Why is that important? Well, as we move further and further away from the sun, it gets dimmer and dimmer by a factor of 1 over the distance squared. And so eventually, you don't get enough solar irradiance of the cells to make enough power to power the mission. And as an example, the solar rays on Lucy, when they're fully deployed near the Earth, they put out 18,000 watts. But when they get out to the Trojans near Jupiter, they actually only put out 500 watts. And so that's how much power you don't get because you're moving away from the sun. The thing, though, is that we can build those much cheaper than we could build what's known as an RTG, a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. And those cost, they're expensive, they're dangerous to handle the plutonium that goes inside of them, and they only put out about 110 watts each. So we would have to put four or five on board. And so that would be problematic. That's sort of the scheme of Lucy. What happened after launch was they both were commanded to deploy, and they did. So these big 7 meter fans start to unfurl. And when they get to the end of the unfurling, there's a latch. And the latch is supposed to grab the leading edge of the solar ray and lock it down so that the solar ray tensions up and the solar cells are flat so that you can point them towards the sun easily and you don't get too much off-axis irradiance. One of the solar arrays didn't latch. So it unfurled, and it got all the way around its route of travel, and the latch didn't grab it. So that's what the engineers are scratching their heads about right now. The fact is that even if it's unlatched, Lucy is still getting about 85% of the power that she needs to perform the mission, which is more than enough to do the mission, even if it never latches. But there are times, this has happened many times in the past, where things like this occur, and as the spacecraft moves on its trajectory, warms up and it cools down, the latches sometimes just lock into place. Sometimes it has to do with a spring not fully deploying, and when it warms up, the whatever's holding it back releases, and then it latches up. So it wouldn't be surprising as Lucy does its phasing maneuvers, where that's going to go out towards Mars and then back down to the Earth and grab a little velocity from the Earth. So it's going to do two of these swing bys, one in 2022 and one in 2024. It's going to heat up and it's going to cool down. It's going to rotate. It's going to move. There's going to be a little bit of vibration put into the solar arrays. It's entirely possible that they'll latch up long before they ever get all the way out to the Trojans.
Yeah, I think just a question. If one think about some problem you would have, a similar problem in your grads with something that don't want to hatch, you can imagine that you move it back and forth and back and forth until it hatches. Is that a type of mechanism that can work like that, or is it a very slowly, delicate moving mechanism?
Well, everything moves slow in space just because we want it to be intentional and we don't want to like send extra vibration out into the rest of the spacecraft. In fact, these solar rays are very delicate. They cannot support their own weight in Earth's gravity field. So they're deployed, when we test them, they're deployed with a gravity offloading jig, which helps it simulate the microgravity that they would have been deployed in. So what it is, though, like if you're trying to get the clasp on a toolbox to close, trying it a few different times, and eventually it locks up. That's exactly what it's like, except for it's a very delicate maneuver. And it could be off a millimeter and not latch. So it could gain a millimeter just by warming up the springs. So
the solar rays, what are they made of?
That's a good question. I believe they're made of a plastic called Kapton, and then they weld in between the layers of the Kapton. There are copper foils, and then they weld the solar cells onto the Kapton down to the copper foils that make the path of the for the current to travel once the solar cell collects the sun. It's like folding up a big plastic sheet and then unfolding it.
Yeah. So these maneuvers, the slingshot maneuvers, that's going to happen with Mars and with the Earth. I don't suppose you get close enough to start getting the upper, the upper levels of the atmosphere where there's very, very thin atmosphere. You wouldn't probably go this close in order to hopefully get this latch to latch again.
That's right. We wouldn't do that because the height of the atmosphere is unpredictable. It changes with the solar variance. And we wouldn't want to risk slowing the spacecraft down when we're coming in expecting to speed it up. You know, because you could get a little drag from the maneuver if you got down that low.
Jim, I'm just curious. You mentioned something about the fact that the array should be properly orientated with respect to the sun to maximize the surface that actually can convert the solar energy to electricity. Now, if we imagine the Lucy spacecraft arrives at its target, then the instruments will have to be pointed to the surface of the asteroid to be observed. So is there a relative motion between the arrays and how they are pointed so that they can point towards the sun and the instruments can point towards the target?
That's a very insightful question, Madi. The easier thing to do is to keep the with solar rays this big, the easiest thing to do is to not move the solar rays if you don't have to. You know, many of the low Earth orbiting spacecraft that we have solar rays that rotate 180 degrees as they move around the Earth so that the solar rays can stay tracking the sun. But on Lucy, these things are so big and the spacecraft is moving so fast that that the best thing to do is to not try and change the orientation of the solar array dynamically as you're coming by and you're looking at an asteroid. But there's actually a pointing deck, a movable deck that all the instruments are on that will track the asteroid as the spacecraft goes by. So the solar rays will stay pointing at the sun, and then the deck will track the asteroids out at the Trojans as it flies by it. By the way, we're not going to stop the spacecraft at any of these asteroids. They're all quick flybys, just like New Horizons flew by Pluto.
That relative speed, if you would express it in terms of the angle that deck with the instruments have to rotate per time, still slow like a minute dial on a clock, or is it something a bit faster?
I don't know exactly, because obviously it depends on how far away the asteroid is that you're observing. I have imagined, and this is just me imagining, and you know, Madi, you always catch me on things I don't know, which is great. But it's faster than the second hand on a clock. I'm certain of that. And it's difficult. When we did this for one of the comets that we encountered back in, it would have been like 2010 or so, we actually chose to move the whole spacecraft. And so the whole spacecraft had to rotate as we flew by this comet. And that was very fast. It was, I can't even remember that one now either, but I used to have that memorized. See, I've forgotten more things than I've actually learned.
In the past, we have spoken about the Lagrange points, L1 and L2. Yeah. That's now between, is it the sun and the Earth or the moon and the Earth? Just sun and the Earth. That's an equilibrium point. But now, yes. Lagrange points also exist in the vicinity of Jupiter. Is that right?
Yes. So any two-body system in orbit around our solar system have these points where they points of equilibrium. And so the one that gets used the most by planetary and heliophysics scientists is the Earth-Sun Lagrange 1. It's about 1 million miles from the Earth towards the Sun, and we can put spacecraft out there that just constantly stare at the Sun or turn around and constantly stare back at the Earth, and it just tracks with the Earth as the Earth goes around the Sun. There's a Lagrange 2 point on the opposite side of the Sun that we don't tend to use very much because you can't see the Earth from that point. There's a Lagrange 4 and 5. I forget where L3 is. Anyway, the bottom line is, I may have the numbering messed up. Lagrange 2 may be beyond the Earth and Lagrange 3 on the other side of the Sun. But there's L4 and L5, Lagrange 4 and 5, which are leading the Sun are leading the Earth as it goes around the Sun and trailing the Earth that goes around the Sun. Well, the same is true for Jupiter. Jupiter has these five Lagrange points because it's a two-body system with the Sun. And so there's a point to either side of Jupiter that is an equilibrium point. And you can imagine as the debris from the formation of the solar system, stuff from the Kuiper Belt comes in, asteroids that got flung out, that sort of thing, they could get captured there and just hang out there. So it's a perfect place to go visit and look at essentially fossils from the formation of our solar system. And I say fossils, I mean that in quotes, because we really don't expect to find, you know, dinosaurs or anything, but they are ancient rocks that can tell us a great deal about how our solar system was formed.
Now that's an interesting point that the Lucy mission is interested in fossils of the solar system's formation. The name Lucy came right from the famous Lucy fossils. Mm-hmm. And the Lucy fossils were named after a song by the Beatles that has right to do with diamonds flying in the sky. And there is an instrument on Lucy that has diamonds on it. And it's that for an infrared spectrometer that have to determine the material out of which through the spectrometry of the Trojans. So it's quite a creative name they gave to this mission. And another interesting bit of now closer history than the ancient fossils is from the Greek mythology. It's a mixture of apparently real history and mythology with the Trojan War, with a lot of heroes around it, that you have the Greek camp, which is on the L4 point. I think you mentioned it is 60 degrees in front of Jupiter in its orbit, and the Trojans on the L5 point, so now trailing 60 degrees behind. Okay, so it's interesting that the names of these asteroids, almost all of them, not exactly all, in the Greek part, on the Greek side, is named after the Greek war heroes, some of which may be mythological. But there are not enough Greek heroes for the approximately 10,000 Trojans there are. So the naming convention now makes provision that it can also be named after Olympic athletes. So all of this is, from a cultural viewpoint, quite fascinating that astronomers are not just these nerds not knowing what's going on in culture and history.
They even know about the Beatles, don't they?
Yeah.
And of course, just to put a damper on your enthusiasm, that Lucy in the sky with diamonds, that a famous song by the Beatles, that of course that abbreviates to LSD. And that was probably the inspiration for guys being on trips. Talking about trips, I'm looking at an orbital diagram here. This I can see why this spacecraft must motor it, because it's got one heck of a distance to travel, because it is, as you said, it's sort of going around the Earth for a bit, then it flies out to Mars, then it comes back to the Earth just to get some speed. And I'm not sure how many times it does that. And then it's out to the orbit of Jupiter. But as you said, these Trojans are they in the orbit of Jupiter, 60 degrees behind and 60 degrees ahead of Jupiter. And after visiting the one lot, it's got to fly all the way over past the Earth and Mars's orbit again, across to the other side of Jupiter's orbit to go and visit the other lot. So, it's got a fair lot of traveling ahead of it.
I would really have tried to take a shortcut. That's an
It is actually taking a shortcut.
Yeah, you know, I had a chance to speak with Hal Levison the week before the launch. Hal is the PI for the mission. And one of the things that he pointed out is that the Trojans and the Greeks are where Lucy is going at will be closer to the Earth than it is to Jupiter. Not by much, but Earth will it'll actually be closer to Earth than Jupiter, because 60 degrees away from Jupiter is still a really big distance.
Yes,
if you think about it. You know, we keep saying they're going to Jupiter, but they're actually not really going to Jupiter.
That's a bit confusing. I'm now also looking at the orbital diagram. One think about being close to Jupiter, but indeed, by far not. I mean, it's a few hundred. It can be, if I just take an estimate here, a few hundred million kilometers between Jupiter and the Trojans or the Greeks.
And I don't know what the distance is between the Earth and the Trojans. But that's what the PI said. The principal investigator said, we'll actually be closer to the Earth than we will be to Jupiter.
Yeah. Now, if you look at the diagram, and you would take the Sun as a reference point, at the one corner and the centroid of the Trojans and Jupiter at the two other angles, that's almost a triangle of equal sides. Mm-hmm. Well, right. It's not an equilateral triangle. And but then the Earth is a little bit away from the Sun on that scale, so that may then indeed cause that the Earth will be closer to the Lucy mission or the Lucy spacecraft.
Yeah, and of course Jupiter is revolving in its orbit as does the Earth, so
right.
it may help it a bit for the shortcut. Yeah.
Back to the solar rays, do they unfurl automatically, or how does it work? Is there a little motor that makes them unfurl? Because I thought, you know, when it comes back to the Earth for a slingshot, couldn't they sort of send something up to fix it?
Oh.
It's too fast.
So two things. One is that, yes, they are automatically commanded to unfurl. So when the spacecraft is released by the rocket, the first thing that any mission really wants to do is they want to get stable, because they don't know if the rocket released them tumbling. And so they usually use a little bit of gas from their engines to stabilize the spacecraft. And then the very next thing they do is open up the solar rays. And that's because at that point, the spacecraft is still on battery power, and they want to get off of batteries as quickly as possible and start using the sun and recharging the battery that they had. So there is a little thing called a brake wire that when the spacecraft is released, the wire breaks, and then that tells the spacecraft, I'm away from the rocket, and then the spacecraft computer says, okay, stabilize the spacecraft, and release the solar rays. So that's all done automatically without ground intervention. When Lucy comes back for an Earth flyby, she'll be moving so fast, Henny, that there's not a chance that we'll be able to catch up to her. So not a thing that you'd want to try and send astronauts or even a robot up to try and fix. I think right now the power system has enough margin that they're predicting that they'll be able to continue the mission even if the solar rays don't latch, solar array doesn't latch. So I think it's still all good for now.
Right. I think we must close off there. Jim, if somebody wants to talk to you, it's via the Facebook group.
Absolutely. I love answering questions on the Facebook group.
Wally, jou besonderhede?
Telefoonnommer 072-45-79208. 072-45-79208.
En dan Mati?
083-625-7154.
En dan die e-posadres van die program, sterreplanete@gmail.com. sterreplanete@gmail.com. Ons sê dankie aan ons panelede, Jim Adams in Amerika, en dan ook Mati Hofman in Bloemfontein en natuurlik Willie Koorts in die Kaap. Tot volgende week. Alles van die beste.